Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from SIRI, an Alaska Native corporation with operations and investments spanning 5 continents, 45 states, and 2 U.S. territories.
A policy on paper is only as good as the people who implement the policy.
The Kenai Peninsula Borough has a new sexual harassment policy after settling a lawsuit against the former mayor. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, April 20th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, a new bill would remove marijuana offenses from online court records.
This is going to help you get one step closer to putting food on the table, to living in a better place. You know, I'm all for it.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Construction season is here, Alaska. Avoid surprises on the drive. Before getting on your way, check 511 for traffic delays. For current traffic information and road conditions, visit 511.alaska.gov or download the app or call 511. For more detailed information about DOT construction projects, visit dot.alaska.gov/construction. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Transportation and Public Facilities.
Anchorage police officials say they're moving forward with getting body cameras on officers, even though they're locked in a dispute with the police officers' union. It's a major development in a 2-year wait for the Anchorage Police Department to outfit its officers with body cameras. Voters approved a tax levy to purchase the cameras in April of 2021, but the police department and the union have remained at odds over the camera policy, and just yesterday, the nonprofit Alaska Black Caucus sued the city over the delay. At a news conference today, Anchorage Police Chief Michael Curl did not give a timeline for when cameras will be on officers. He said after talking to the city's legal department, the decision was made to move forward with the cameras as the policy is sorted out.
We always thought that the policy and the implementation had to be concurrent. I was informed by the municipal legal team that they are absolutely 2 separate things, that I can implement body-worn cameras while the arbitration is going on.
APD officials today also released the latest version of the body camera policy, which the department will use after they buy the cameras. There is new language surrounding the release of camera footage. Footage would be subject to public records requests and can only get released after investigations have concluded, which can take months or years. However, Deputy Police Chief Sean Case says a new section of the policy allows for the police chief to release footage of incidents like police shootings before an investigation wraps up.
That third paragraph gives the chief the ability to kind of circumvent that system in incidents that are of public interest, the media wants to know about and the public wants to know about.
The policy also prohibits officers from reviewing or copying camera footage under specific circumstances, including when there's use of deadly force, when there's an in-custody death, or when an APD employee is the subject of a criminal investigation. The policy could change based on what comes out of arbitration. Alaska Black Caucus President Celeste Hodge Groudon says she's pleased that the police department is moving forward with getting the body cameras, but she's still wary.
I'm happy to see that there's some movement, I just want to see now the timeline for getting these body cams.
Curl, the police chief, says the timing of the announcement today had nothing to do with the lawsuit. The Kenai Peninsula Borough will pay out more than $200,000 to settle a harassment suit filed last fall against former borough mayor Charlie Pierce. That's according to a statement released by the borough Tuesday, 8 months after Pierce resigned and 6 months after his former executive assistant, Pamela Wastel, sued him for repeated sexual harassment. Wastel also sued the borough for failing to protect her. This is the third public workplace misconduct complaint against Pierce the borough has settled, totaling nearly $500,000 in damages to taxpayers and the borough. KDLL's Sabine Pooks has more.
So far, the borough's been tight-lipped about many of the details of the suit, but at its meeting Tuesday, the assembly agreed to make public that it had settled the lawsuit with Wastel for $237,500. The borough will pay a little over $206,000, and Pierce owes over $31,000, according to the statement read by Assembly President Bren Johnson at the meeting.
Neither the Assembly nor Mayor Michicki are happy with all aspects of this settlement, but we also recognize that years of litigation on this matter is not in the best interest of the borough or the taxpayers.
In a statement sent by her lawyer Tuesday night, Wastel said she was pleased by the settlement, but that, quote, there's not enough money in the world to go through what I have, end quote. Pierce's lawyer, Richard Moses of Anchorage, says Pierce isn't paying his sum personally. Rather, he told the borough his part of the settlement would be covered by the borough's Alaska Municipal League Joint Insurance Association policy, according to Sean Kelly, the borough's attorney. Kelly says that was news to the borough late Tuesday night. A spokesperson from the Insurance Association did not respond to a request for more information before airtime. Mayor Peter Michicki, who voters picked to fill Pierce's spot in the special election in February, says the borough's portion of the settlement will come from its insurance and litigation fund, which he says contains an adequate balance to cover the costs. Neither the borough nor Pierce is admitting wrongdoing, according to the respective parties. The lawsuit was filed on behalf of Wastel in Kenai Superior Court last October. It alleged Pierce would touch and kiss Wastel against her will, and that he made sexual remarks using his authority to intimidate her behind closed doors in his Soldotna office. It also said he had intimidated other female employees and that the borough didn't have the reporting mechanisms in place to protect them or address the allegations. In her statement, Wastel said she didn't feel safe reporting the harassment at the time since the acting human resources director was Pierce's chief of staff, Aaron Rhodes. Wastel's attorney, Caitlin Shortell, says her client's currently looking for another job to fund her retirement and pay her bills.
What Mr. Pierce and the borough did to Ms. Wastel took away from her not only a job she loved, but also her plan to retire.
Moses, Pierce's lawyer, says Pierce is happy to put the suit behind him. It's not the first suit that's implicated Pierce during his time as mayor. The borough previously settled with two former human resources directors over bullying and discrimination complaints against Pierce. At Tuesday's meeting, Michicki said the borough was adopting new sexual harassment and discrimination policies, so borough employees will know how to report incidents of assault and what the consequences are, including for elected officials.
We separate out electeds from regular employees. We're all employees of the borough, but we felt that we had to make a stronger statement for everyone that may be in this building.
He says complaints for elected officials would be forwarded to the Assembly for further action, including potential recall. The new policy, emailed to borough employees Monday, elaborates on several ways to report harassment, including through the borough's new online reporting tool or directly to a supervisor, the mayor, the human resources director, or the borough attorney. Michicki also says he'll establish a three-person mixed-gender reporting panel of borough directors to field and address complaints. Shortell, the lawyer for Wastel, says change for other employees was very important to her client.
And she's very happy to see that the borough is adopting new policies.
She says even though the borough claims it had a policy in place before, Wastel didn't have a place to report when it came to her own alleged harassment.
I would just add a caution that a policy on paper is only as good as the people who implement the policy.
She says it will be up to the borough to make sure the policy is not just words on a page. In Kenai, I'm Sabine Pooks.
The number of Western Alaska-bound chum salmon caught by commercial fishers off the South Alaska Peninsula is small but significant given the depressed state of the runs. That was the message of a longtime fisheries researcher yesterday at a Yukon River Drainage Fisheries Association preseason meeting in Fairbanks. Dr. David Schindler with the University of Washington cited a recent Alaska Department of Fish and Game estimate that says about 6% of returning Western Alaska-bound chums were intercepted in the June Area M mixed stock commercial salmon fishery during the last two summers.
About 100,000 in 2022 and about 200,000 in 2021 were headed for Western Alaska rivers. And the question is, are those big numbers or are those small numbers?
And Schindler said that depends on the overall size of the Western Alaska chum runs.
If the stock is at really high abundance and escapements are at levels that would saturate the spawning grounds or above the escapement goal, then an additional 6% or losing 6% will have almost no effect on how productive that population is. But when the escapements are very low, as we've seen the last couple of years, then 6% can actually contribute a lot of spawning potential to the population. So 6% means a lot more when the population is severely depressed as it is now.
Schindler added that can have serious implications for individual stocks.
When stocks get to really low abundance, you run the risk of having local extinctions of small populations of chum and individual tributaries. An additional harvest at low abundance will increase the risk of extinctions.
Schindler also spoke at a February meeting of the Alaska Board of Fisheries when the panel approved a modest reduction in fishing time for the June Area M commercial fishery. A bill introduced last week in the state legislature would temporarily close the Area M fishery June 10th through the 30th. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a program in Bristol Bay aims to preserve Alaska Native languages.
Language revitalization just takes one person that's really motivated and really cares.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
You know that eating fruits and vegetables supports good health, but did you also know that frozen and canned produce offers the same health benefits as fresh? It's true. Whether fresh, frozen, canned, or from the land, eating fruits and veggies can lead to a long and healthy life. So when it comes to getting the fruits and veggies you need to stay healthy, remember, every bite counts. This message sponsored by SNAP.
For Alaskans convicted of minor marijuana offenses before the state legalized the substance in 2014, it can be a struggle to get jobs and access housing while those convictions remain publicly available. This year, the state's court system and legislature are making moves to expunge marijuana charges from public records. KDLL's Riley Board has this story.
In CourtView, the state's public website for accessing court records, a marijuana possession charge shows up as misconduct, controlled substance 6A. It isn't immediately clear the charges for something that has now been legal for 8 years. For people 21 and older with marijuana charges from 2014 or earlier, before the state legalized the substance recreationally, this can be a significant barrier to getting housing or a job, because employers and landlords can easily access CourtView to make decisions about applicants. House Bill 28 is making its way through the legislature and would remove marijuana convictions from the public records and from some state background checks. The bill was introduced by East Anchorage Republican Representative Stanley Wright.
It came up during my campaign. A lot of folks saying things like, hey, you know, I can't get out of my mom's house. I can't get an apartment because I have this marijuana charge. I'm being held back, man. You guys need to do something about it. It's not even illegal anymore.
Wright introduced the bill first thing this session after a similar bill passed the House last year but didn't make it out of the Senate. Earlier this year, the Alaska Supreme Court announced a rule change that will remove marijuana charges from CourtView. That goes into effect in just a couple weeks and will scrub 750 names from the site. Recreational marijuana was legalized in Alaska by a ballot measure in 2014, the third state to do so. Wright's bill, introduced just before the Supreme Court ruling in January, calls for removing minor marijuana charges from CourtView and also from non-federal background checks administered by the State Department of Public Service, or DPS. Wright says even though parts of the bill may be redundant with the court ruling, his legislation is still an important additional step because it would codify the CourtView record clearing in the law.
If you could easily say that you are going to take it off the website, someone new can easily come and say we're going to put it back on the web. So I think it's important that we run the bill.
His legislation also removes pre-2014 marijuana possession charges from background checks conducted by DPS, the kind that might be requested by an employer or landlord. DPS would need to examine 8,500 cases for the bill to pass. Individuals will still be able to see marijuana records by going in person to a courthouse and requesting the documents. They just won't be readily available online. Wright says the bill isn't really about weed. It's about removing barriers for Alaskans.
You know, it's so many people, so many stories of, you know, just being stuck and folks trying to get jobs. And why would we want to keep people from reaching their full potential? And I think this bill helps those individuals do that.
The bill has bipartisan sponsorship and support from the Alaska Marijuana Industry Association. The association's legislative liaison submitted a letter of support, calling it a, quote, incremental but important step in the right direction towards destigmatizing cannabis consumption. Wright says he's hopeful about the bill this session.
You know, I just want people to reach their full potential in life. And, you know, if this is going to help you get one step closer to putting food on the table, to, you know, living in a better place, you know, I'm all for it. And I think a lot of folks, once they realize that's what this is all about, I think they'll start to accept it.
The bill moved out of the House Judiciary Committee last Friday and is waiting for a hearing in House Finance. In Juneau, I'm Riley Board.
The Bristol Bay Native Corporation has spearheaded higher education scholarships and programs for its shareholders for years. Now, its leaders want to bring that same energy to bolster its cultural heritage program with a focus on language revitalization. KDLG's Christina McDermott has more.
Bristol Bay's native languages are thousands of years old. The Bristol Bay Native Corporation's Cultural Heritage Program Director, Kalar Simblair, says that languages hold and carry cultural knowledge through generations.
And so you have 10,000 years worth of knowledge, you know, multiple generations that go from astronomy to, you know, ecology, you know, interactions between people and spirituality.
Larson Blair spoke at the Bristol Bay Sustainability Summit last month in Dillingham. She said that BBNC's Education Foundation plans to focus on the intersection between education and culture. The Cultural Heritage Program will help them to do so.
This commitment will put into action that the foundation will not only work in but value our cultural ways of knowing, doing, and being at the same time as our Western focus with the scholarships.
Language revitalization is a central part of that commitment. So far, several communities, including Igiagig, Pedro Bay, and Manicotic, have received money from the program's Cultural Heritage Grant to fund language workshops, immersion programs, and short-term community lessons in local native languages. But language revitalization remains a primary concern for most of the corporation's member tribes. Language revitalization requires fluent educators and the opportunity to integrate the language into everyday life. But for many native languages, there are comparatively few fluent speakers in the region. Typical classroom settings, the most common way to learn languages, can cost thousands of dollars, and learning in class doesn't always translate well into practice. Larson Blair says Western-style classes can also require students to take on a mental load.
Getting graded to take your own class and getting, you know, a low grade in it, it's not going to feel great. There's not a lot of flexibility with the classes.
Of course, classes aren't the only way to learn. Along with funding community efforts, BBNC hopes to establish apprenticeship programs and language immersion schools. Larson Blair says it's another way to help train a generation of fluent educators.
That, you know, someday we have an immersion school for Aleutic, Yupik, and Dene'ina where kids can go learn English, math, science, and get a degree, but do it in their own language.
She says this isn't out of reach.
Language revitalization just takes one person that's really motivated and really cares. And we have so many people in our region that are so excited about language. And we have speakers that are still here. And so it's something that's doable. It's something that, you know, if we come together, this is like really something we can make happen.
Aside from planning for the long term, BBNC also offers immersive culture summer camps with language learning. Camps are scheduled on Iliamna Lake for this summer. Chukko Yukomi, Christina McDermott, Tahonga.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
ConocoPhillips Alaska, building the next generation of Alaska's workforce through investments in education and vocational training to provide jobs right here at home. ConocoPhillips Alaska. Alaska Pacific University offers degree programs with life-friendly, flexible scheduling and course delivery options grounded in real-life experience. Alaska Pacific University offers innovative programming in nursing, counseling psychology, outdoor and environmental public health, and more. Financial aid is available. Advance your career with APU today.
Learn more and apply now at alaskapacific.edu. This message sponsored by Alaska Pacific University.
The University of Alaska Southeast will showcase student work made in the school's Northwest Coast Art Program on Friday in Juneau. Earlier this week, students were making paddles in a basement workshop on campus. Lukwil Gatgede Tamsoyak, James Williams, was working away at one for Master Carver Wayne Price's class.
I can't quite get it to look the way I want it to look. So I've been fiddling around with it in different designs.
Several of Price's beginning carving students were working intently, hunched over their paddles with chisels or paintbrushes. Nobody was chatting. Price says they're almost ready to show their work.
Everybody's counting how many days to go and how much work they got to get done, and I call it OT, which is overtime.
Price says the students have been putting in a lot of hours out of class, too, and he says the weekend show offers a good chance for them to learn how to present their work.
Based on my own personal experiences from doing art shows, and they're tough. They're really tough. Some people are really, really good at it, but it didn't happen right away for me. It was a slow climb to the top.
Price's advanced class will bring their work too, including masks and clan hats. The gallery is open to the public from 4 to 8 p.m. Friday in the same building as the University of Alaska Southeast Campus Library. Yupik and Inupiaq students from the 4th to the 8th grades competed in a native language spelling bee in downtown Anchorage last weekend. But as KNBA's Rhonda McBride found out, this annual event is about more than just words.
New word. Jingseek.
In the Yupik language, or Yuktun, Jingseek is the word for little people, elf-like creatures who wear cone-shaped hats.
Jingseek, C-I-N-G-S-S-I-I-K, Jingseek.
Asichtuk.
Asichtuk means good. You got it right. And Nunam Ikwa's team heard that word a lot. It swept all three top spots. Elena Canoe, an eighth grader, took home the first place Yupik spelling trophy.
Feels good. Winning?
Winning for the second year in a row. Her coach and Yupik teacher Savannah Strongheart says the news made her feel a little dizzy.
I'm so excited. My goal ever since I started was to get 1, 2, 3. And this year, I have 1, 2, 3. So I'm like all excited and I want to scream. Oh my goodness.
The spelling bee came full circle this year, especially for those who've been involved since it began 12 years ago. One of the students who took second place in that very first spelling bee returned as a guest speaker.
There's so many opportunities for young kids these days teaching their native language and culture.
12 years ago, Casey Jack was an eighth grader who represented the tiny Bering Sea village of Stebbins. Today, he's an adjunct professor of Yupik language at the University of Alaska Fairbanks and credits the spelling bee for sparking his passion for his native language.
One of the defining moments, I would say.
While the Yupik spelling bee had four schools involved, there was only one team for the Inupiaq language. Cameron Toktu of Brevik Mission took first place. Casey Jack applauded the school's efforts. He says he knows from personal experience how small steps can take you a long way. In Anchorage, I'm Rhonda McBride.
Artificial intelligence has become good at wordcraft to the point where it's scaring some real-life wordcrafters. Alaska writer Don Reardon asked Microsoft's AI tool called Bing to write a poem in Reardon's style. The results both impressed him and freaked him out. Alaska Public Media's Liz Ruskin interviewed Don about that, and the whole experience turned out to be trippier than expected.
Let me give you an ultra-brief bio of Don Reardon. He's a professor at the University of Alaska Anchorage. He's a novelist, screenwriter, and plain-spoken poet. The Don Reardon-style poem Artificial Intelligence wrote for him references his upbringing in Bethel.
Can you share the poem with us?
Sure, I have it right here. It's called The Last Salmon. I remember the last salmon I caught with my grandfather. on the Kuskokwim River before he passed away. He taught me how to gut it with a sharp knife and steady hand, how to smoke it over alderwood and store it for the winter. He told me stories of his youth.
And what did you think of the result? Did the AI capture your voice?
Well, it was certainly an interesting experience. The poem that AI produced was not something that I would have written myself, but it did have some elements of my style and themes. It was kind of surreal to read something that sounded like me, but it wasn't me.
Do you think AI can be creative?
That's a hard question to answer. I think AI can mimic human creativity to some extent, but I don't think it can replace it. There is something unique and irreplaceable about human creativity. That comes from our emotions, experiences, and values. AI can learn from us, but it can't be us.
Well, thank you for sharing your thoughts and your poem with us, Don. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you for having me, Liz. It was a pleasure talking with you, too.
And now, Don, it's time for you and I to come clean with the listeners.
Yeah, I think it is. Moments before this actual interview, I asked Bing's AI, Microsoft Bing's, to write our interview for us so we could just, you know, be done and go have coffee or something.
That's right. Everything you've just heard since my ultra brief bio of Reardon at the top of this story was written by artificial intelligence. Reardon asked Bing to write an interview between journalist Liz Ruskin and Alaska writer Don Reardon. The questions artificial Liz asked were close to what I intended to ask, so we just read the script Bing wrote for us. But then we had a real conversation, so here we are just talking, using our own brains. At least, I thought that's what we were doing.
Does some part of you worry that Bing is a better writer than you are?
It's probably going to make a lot more money than I've ever made at writing. I don't think so. I think there's the human part. And I guess what's a little bit scary about the introductory material that Bing wrote, that part is really how I feel about it, the part that it can't replace us. It doesn't have the heart that we do.
Real Don Reardon is saying AI won't replace us, but he's quoting artificial Don Reardon because he thinks AI said it better. Our replacements have arrived.
Open the pod bay doors, Hal.
I'm sorry, Dave. I'm afraid I can't do that.
For Alaska Public Media, I'm Liz Ruskin. I really am. I wrote that.
That's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts. We had reports tonight from Wesley Early, Rhonda McBride, and Liz Ruskin in Anchorage, Sabine Pooks in Kenai, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Riley Board and Yvonne Crumbry in Juneau, and Christina McDermott in Dillingham. If you want to send us a news tip, question, or comment, email us at news@alaskapublic.org. Our audio engineer is Chris Hyde. Tim Rocky is our producer. I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Princess Lodges, offering glass-domed railcar tours to Talkeetna and Denali National Park for Alaska summer adventures. Your journey begins at princesslodges.com.
And by
Alaska Air Cargo, serving the commerce and business needs of 20 Alaska communities, from Adak to Barrow to Ketchikan. More information at alaskacargo.com.
This is statewide news on Alaska Public Media.